Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on Tuesday, February 19th, 2013. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Tapas and Vino. Located in the heart of Riviera Village, Redondo Beach, Tapas and Vino offers an idyllic location to meet and eat and has quickly become a favorite destination of local foodies. Opened in October 2011, this charming bistro offers an eclectic menu of small plates, salads, soups, and entrees for lunch and dinner daily. In addition, brunch is served every Saturday and Sunday with endless, yes, that's right, endless mimosas and bellinis. The popular outdoor patio boasts a vibrant scene each evening and features live music every Tuesday night. The extensive wine list offers varietals from regions around the globe, and brew enthusiasts will appreciate the comprehensive beer selection. Tapas and Vino also hosts monthly wine and or beer education events, provides off-premise catering, and has a private dining room for small groups. Tapas and Vino is currently running a Not Just Tapas and Vino campaign. For listeners of the South Bay Show, mention the South Bay Show or South Bay by Jackie and receive 25% off a lunch or Saturday and Sunday brunch entree. Be sure to visit the Tapas and Vino Facebook page for weekly specials and discounts. Tapas and Vino is located at 1729 South Catalina Avenue in Redondo Beach. For more information, visit the website at tapasyvino.com. That's TAPASYVINO. tapasyvino.com. Or call 310-791-8200. That's 310-791-8200. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show, or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America, this is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. Our show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning, everybody.
All right, good. And with us today, of course, is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you doing?
Great, good, and boy, we learned so much last week. We just didn't get enough, and I think this is a first, isn't it, Jackie?
It certainly is. Our guest this morning is Sean Scott, and he has the distinction of being our first guest to do back-to-back shows. Sean is the author of The Red Guide to Recovery, a resource handbook for disaster survivors. He shared some valuable information with us on our show last week, and we wanted to invite him back to share a little more on a very important yet seldom spoken about topic. Sean's going to discuss post-disaster scams and what disaster survivors often encounter when first responders leave the scene. He'll share some valuable insight into some of the tricks and tactics used by disaster chasers and scam artists who prey on people who have lost a home or suffered damage after a disaster event. He'll discuss some common ploys and how they are used on unsuspecting disaster survivors to win their confidence and drop their guard. The state of chaos created by a disaster, coupled with the lack of knowledge of what to do in the aftermath, makes disaster survivors vulnerable to many pitfalls that often accompany post-disaster scenarios. This is where disaster survivors can and often do make bad choices that can have catastrophic consequences. Welcome back to the show, Sean. We are so glad you could join us again this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
So we really enjoyed last week, Sean, and the Red Guide to Recovery.com, very comprehensive website, valuable information, easily obtainable, whether it's the ebook or the app for your smartphone or the free memory jogger, all the information is excellent. But when we talk about the guide and we sort of went through the different chapters, it was actually the last chapter, chapter 14, that we got into a discussion about after the show that prompted the need for you to come back, because of all the things that we think about when we think about, you know, properly preparing for a disaster, and also even post-disaster, immediately post-disaster, displacement and relocation, the elements of disaster relief and financial assistance and homeowners insurance and all of these things that are critical, the one thing, avoiding disaster scams, is just something that I think most people really have no experience with if they've never been in a disaster. And even if they're prepared in every other way, these vultures come and mix in with the official disaster response people and the Red Cross and others, and really wreak havoc with people's lives, don't they?
Yes, I mean, it's very pervasive throughout the country, whether it's a catastrophic event, you know, like a Hurricane Sandy, or if it's a single, you know, structure fire, you're always going to have an element out there who is, you know, their business is, you know, built on chasing after the fire trucks or, you know, the latest disaster. Now, I'd like to kind of, you know, start off by saying not everybody who's out there chasing fires or disasters is a scam artist. There are some legitimate businesses out there who, you know, in some cases are forced to, you know, deploy sales staff and people after disaster events, strictly because if they don't, the scam artists will take, you know, their business away. So there are some businesses out there that are trying to compete and legitimately, you know, in this, you know, post-disaster recovery market. So, you know, a homeowner won't, it's very difficult for them to differentiate a good guy from a bad guy. So there's some certain, you know, guidelines that everybody should be aware of, you know, when they're solicited by somebody, you know, off the street, you know, especially after the fire department, you know, rolls up the hoses and, you know, and they've left.
Right.
You know, people are so vulnerable, you know, when their home is, you know, destroyed or heavily damaged or they're displaced. You know, they're looking for help. They'll, in some cases, especially the elderly, are extremely vulnerable to anybody who will come up that will want to try and help.
It's frightening. We're going to get into the whole subject, and I'm so pleased you're here to discuss this, because this is so, you know, this is the mini disaster after the disaster. And we want everyone to either prepare themselves or think of a neighbor, or think of a friend or someone in their family who might be vulnerable, and start to have that conversation. So can you lay out just sort of the timeline of what happens post-disaster, what should happen, and what often does happen that's not good? And I want you to emphasize, many of these businesses are legitimate. They are there for a purpose, a real reason. There's a need for them, but then there are the scam artists mixed in with them. So take us through that.
Okay, so let's just create a scenario. Let's say, you know, your house had a fire, and the fire department is there. They typically will set up a fire line, a plastic tape that prohibits the public from crossing into, you know, their scene until they're finished putting out the fire and making it, you know, safe for people to come back to the property. Mm. So during that time, you know, everybody is kept across the street or far enough away so the fire department can do, you know, their work to suppress the fire and protect lives and property. Well, then as soon as they're finished, you know, you've got, you know, smoke damage, water damage, you've got fire damage, structural, you know, collapse in some cases, you know, a lot of destruction. And so, you know, the homeowners are typically have a few minutes, you know, with the fire department where they're going to ask the most common question, which is, what do we do now? And in most cases, you know, the fire department will tell the people, you know, call your insurance company, you know, and, you know, make sure you're careful who you talk to of these people who are across the street, because they appear, you know, pretty much on any fire, there's going to be a group out there. Some of them are just looky-loos, you know, neighbors, you know, or people, you know, passing by who happen to see, you know, the action and want to, you know, take a look. And some people are photographers. But then you do have the other elements out there, which are contractors. You have people who are looking to handle the personal property. So let's say, you know, in this event of a fire, you have your clothing that is full of smoke odor. There are companies that specialize in deodorizing, you know, content, furniture, you know, clothing, toys, you know, any of your personal property. And they also want to pack out these items and move them off-site to their facilities to clean them and store them and, you know, create inventories for the insurance. There's a lot of money in that industry. Then you have companies who specialize in mitigating the flood damage, who go in, you know, when the fire department, you know, finishes putting out the fire, there's typically a lot of water. So there's companies who specialize in removing the water and drying the building out. Then you have, you know, contractors who are there who want to board up, you know, to board up the windows that are have been blown out or where the fire department vents a roof. They want to, you know, put a tarp over the roof. And there's a number of things. And then you have public insurance adjusters, guys who want to represent a homeowner, you know, against their insurance company, you know, for the, you know, the claim process. So there's a lot of entities out there that have all one thing in common. They realize you have a fat insurance policy that they may have an opportunity to get a piece of. Mm-hmm. And so as a homeowner, you need to be aware of this, that, you know, if you were to tell any of these people at any moment that you don't have any insurance, that would be like holding up the cross to the vampire. That's the worst thing they can hear. Oh, there's no money to be had. We're out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, you need to know ahead of time that you will be approached. You know, there are people who, you know, their businesses depend on this, you know, industry to survive. And, you know, you need to know what they're after. And then you need to know, you know, how to navigate the process, when to sign a contract, and what language to watch out for. I mean, it's complex, and it's more complex than we can go into the depths of the detail on this show. But just to kind of summarize, so what should you do? So the minute the fire department leaves, you need to call your insurance company. And as these people begin to approach you, you can accept their business cards and just let them know, hey, we'll call you if we need you. And
now,
you
wait, this is not the night of the fire. Would you recommend that people simply tell anyone that tries to approach them physically, face-to-face, you know, we'll take your card and we'll evaluate what we need to do in the next few days, and we'll give you a call. And if they push, and if they say, well, you need to have this boarded up in the next few hours, do you want to be vandalized, do you want to be victimized, you say to them, well, we don't have any insurance, they'll go away right away.
Well, they may. They may. I mean, it is one tactic. I mean, they're very, very aggressive.
Right.
Typically, they don't take no for an answer that easily.
Right.
Because there's, you know, always the concept. Remember, a lot of these guys out there are paid on commission.
Right.
So their livelihood depends on them signing you up, and they're going to get a percentage of, you know, whatever contract they can get. You know, and then one step further, the guys, you know, who are out there who specialize or asking to board up your house, there's really, I mean, there are businesses out there who, you know, proclaim that we specialize in board ups. Well, in reality, there's not a lot of money to be made boarding up a house.
Mm-hmm.
It's a means to an end. So if you get the board up as a contractor, you know, it's a way to entrench yourself in the project, build a relationship, and a lot of times these board ups are offered for, you know, very, very cheap, you know, a couple hundred dollars or less. or sometimes for free. So it instills this feeling of obligation in the owner, like, wow, these guys are out here the night of the fire. They did boarded up this thing for free. How could I tell them that they can't bid on my job? And they're so nice to me. And they sent me flowers when I was in the, you know, my wife and I, our flowers when we were in the hotel. And I got to give them a chance. So it's just all part of a very well-orchestrated program to and sales, you know, job to secure the job of the rebuilding.
Wait a minute, I got to ask something. They send you flowers?
Oh, sure. I mean, they're going to do anything possible to, you know, to remember, to win your confidence. So you hear the word con artist, and con is sort of a derivative of the word confidence. So if they can win your confidence, make you feel confident that they are the guys to use, then you're going to drop your guard, and you're going to feel comfortable that, you know, hey, these guys, this is they said they've done this for 30 years, and they have, you know, hundreds of references, and wow, I feel great. Mm-hmm. But if you don't take the steps to really verify what you're being told is actually true, you're setting yourself up for a scam or to fall prey to, you know, some sort of a predatory sales tactic.
So, you know, last time we talked, Sean, last week, I felt that so many of the things that you were saying were so valuable that we had to, you know, we did and we had to get you back on as soon as possible to discuss these things. But the feeling's back. I mean, Sean, there were fires last night all over the country.
Every day they're happening right now.
They're happening right now that people are suffering and they're alive. The family's out, the pets are out. As far as they're concerned, they had a successful exit from a very, very bad situation. Now what's left? Well, there's damage. The fire damaged this, the damage that. They're about to be victimized. And,
right.
And there's nothing we can do right now. I mean, because people in general, I think, around the country, this is not, of all the things that we've discussed, preparing for disaster in America, of all the things that I think we've ever discussed, this is something that that is not natural. This is not, you know, nature. This is not act of God. This is a crime, really. This is like a crime show.
Well, you know, and again, you know, there's so many facets of this that we can share, but I want to kind of focus on a couple of short examples to kind of shed some light on how a disaster survivor can evolve into a disaster victim very quickly.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got this insurance policy, and it has, you know, allowances for specific things, you know, that after a disaster that covers you to make you whole. So if you deplete those proceeds, you know, you're reducing the amount of money you have left to rebuild your home or replace your personal property and restore your life. So as an example, here's what a scam can look like. Let's say you had a garage fire, and the garage is completely gutted. And so a company comes out and says, hey, we would like to come and board up, you know, your home and make sure that, you know, nobody, you know, can enter or trespass or vandalize or steal, you know, what was in your garage. So you say, okay, you're going to be signing what they call an emergency services work authorization. Now, in most cases, these work authorizations have a clause that basically waives the right to rescind, which means you can't cancel it. Once you sign it, it's based on an emergency situation that needs to be addressed immediately. So all the costs incurred at that point, you know, you can't stop the process. So if it's a simple garage and you're thinking to yourself, well, this should take maybe two guys, maybe 3 hours to get the material, come back, put them up, you know, okay, you can kind of in your mind maybe think this is maybe going to cost me $600, $700, $800. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of comfortable. But in a lot of cases, and I'm going to say in most cases, you're not given a estimate of what these emergency repairs are going to cost. You're given a sheet that tells you the charges that the contractor is going to bill your insurance company. And so you think, well, they're going to bill the insurance company. I'm not going to worry about it. Well, again, this is coming out of your insurance proceeds.
Right.
This is reducing the amount you have to rebuild your home. So now back to the garage. If, and I've seen this in many cases, where a very simple task, which should take two guys a couple of hours, all of a sudden this contractor shows up with 8 to 10 guys and 3 or 4 trucks, and they've gone beyond just boarding up the house. They're looking at getting permits to restore the utilities that have been pulled off by the utility company. They're cleaning up the glass. They're starting to do some selective demolition. They're embedding themselves into this job deeper and deeper, and now what you thought was going to be, you know, $800 is turning into $10,000 to $15,000.
Oh my God!
Because now they're you know, moving personal property out, and it's all under this guise of, oh, this is emergency service, this is needed immediately, and they have guys coming out testing for asbestos and lead-based paint, you know. And pretty soon, you know, they're in so deep. And during this time, you as a homeowner have no idea how much is being billed. They're billing for every man, for every truck that's there. They're billing for every, you know, sheet of plywood, all the materials. And it just keeps ratcheting up.
And all the while, if I were them, I would have at least one or two people devoted to managing the family.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure the family's comfortable, getting coffee for the family, explaining
mm-hmm.
what's going on and that sort of thing.
Exactly. Buying pizzas, bringing donuts in, you know, having a good laugh and trying to
right.
bring that, you know, that the atmosphere of this catastrophe into, you know, a little bit more of a comfortable environment.
The family entertainers,
you know? Yeah.
So, okay, so some of the things you describe have to be done. I mean, if there's glass
right.
broken and scattered about the property, that has to be cleaned up, right?
Yes.
So what is a homeowner to do?
Well, I would say first and primary thing to remember is the word accountability. So if you call your insurance company, they have typically a lot of contractors that work with them on a regular basis. And their, you know, their pricing structure is set up to be reasonable and customary of what the insurance company is used to paying for certain services. And so they can be somewhat of a watchdog, you know, to help control costs, because they're looking out, you know, for the insured, as well as they don't want to be taken advantage of. Plus, if you're a homeowner that's using a contractor recommended by the insurance company, you know, the accountability factor comes into play. If that contractor abuses you, messes up, or does something that's not, you know, you have somebody to complain to that could, you know, jeopardize that contractor ever being called out again by that insurance company. So you have a certain amount of leverage in that situation. And that's not to say that all contractors recommended by insurance companies are good. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is that, you know, when you're getting a contract, you know, to do these emergency services, you need to get it in writing, a price not to exceed a certain amount. I mean, if you're having a remodel done in your home, are you just going to give somebody a checkbook and say, charge me whatever you want?
Mm-hmm.
Of course not. You're going to say, give me an estimate. And in these situations after a fire, you're going to have 3 or 4 contractors often out there. If they want to do the board up, then they need to provide, you know, the guy out there with the, you know, the best price, you know, let me see, you know, what you can do and what does that include. But these emergency services work authorizations, because they're carte blanche, you know, it's an open-ended ticket.
Right. And to play the scenario out, I've just saved my family's life. We just got out by the skin of our teeth. A few seconds more, Sean, and either, you know, I'd be dead or some member of my family would be dead. Perhaps they've suffered a tragedy. They lost a treasured family pet, and there was nothing that could be done. They couldn't go back in. That was that. And so they're already in shock. There's a level of grief. And then these guys come by and say, here, sign this, no money changes hands, we'll just come in and take care of it. I can see how a lot of people would be duped into doing that without taking the right steps.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, now we've covered some of the scenario. We'll cover some more, but we're going to take a break in a few minutes. I just want to say that you've provided so many great pieces of information. Where can people turn? What is one of the first things that you think that people should do to prepare themselves, a neighbor or a relative who might be vulnerable to these kinds of tactics?
Well, I would say primarily you need to get educated. You need to prepare for recovery. So our country right now is in a mode after Hurricane Sandy about, you know, the importance of preparedness. And primarily that is involved for, you know, that involves individuals and families buying a 3-day kit, having plenty of medications, considering, you know, preparations for your pets, you know, et cetera. And those are all great things. But nobody is talking about, you know, preparing for recovery. What are you going to do on the fourth day after your 3-day kit is, you know, used up and day four has come? You know, now you're starting to get into the full, you know, phase of beginning the steps of recovery. You know, how do you vet a contractor? How do you know the guys that are coming to, that you're going to be married to contractually, that are going to be rebuilding your house? How do you know? How will you know that these are good guys, that they're going to take care of you, that they're not going to give you shoddy workmanship or take advantage of you, you know, or sue you? You know, I mean, that's, you know, let me just share one more thing. You know, we were talking briefly about personal property. You know, there's companies out there that specialize in cleaning your clothes and deodorizing the personal property that's within your home. Some of them, you know, we're talking about the potentials for scams. If these guys charge you too much and the insurance company balks and says, you know, this is exorbitant, we're not paying these rates to do this service. Some of these types of companies who are, you know, we'll say on the dark side, will hold your personal property hostage.
Right.
And they'll basically say, we're not going to give you your stuff back until you pay us the full amount of our bill.
Right.
And so if you know, the insurance company is saying this isn't fair and reasonable, and they, you know, take a step back and say, well, Joe, you signed up with them. It's on you. Now you've got a fight on your hands. And they're holding all of your stuff. So that's one of the pitfalls.
Wow, that's just a nightmare. I just have chills thinking about it, especially after a disaster. I mean, who among us has prepared for a disaster, and then further, who among us has prepared to recover from a disaster in terms of having?
Joe, that's a whole other show.
Yeah. Oh.
We'll have preparing for disaster on Tuesday, preparing for recovery on Wednesday.
You know, while I have an opportunity to jump in here, and we're talking, of course, about all the bad ones. Quite familiar with the company called Surf Pro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they when we first our association first. Started. They worked with us as one of our sponsors. And I do know people that have had problems, have had fires. And I know that I recommended contacting the local Surf Pro of Redondo/Manhattan. And they came in, and I know they did a wonderful job. They spent a good deal of time. It was carpet and walls and cleaning and wood, and so there are a number of organizations that are out there that we do want to acknowledge that do it right. I've never seen them hovering around somebody's tragedy. Mm-hmm. But you see it in, like I said, and I mentioned it last week, we see it in the movies, but after I mentioned that from the movies was how this conversation started with Sean, and that, yes, there are those people that are out there. And I think the big thing that he said earlier was we do need to set back and take one step back and think about what's happening first, and certainly do not go out and make any rash decisions. And, you know, if somebody was going to send flowers to me just to stay on the good side, I'd rip off their tag and I'd give it to my wife and I'd sign my own note on it.
So George, now, of course, these questions, let's get into that after the break, but these questions of who to turn to, well, ServPro is a nationwide organization. Mm-hmm. There may be local organizations. There should be a list of locally approved post-disaster contractors that people in your organization can turn to. Do you have such a thing in your organization?
No, haven't even thought about it.
Yeah. It's
other than, you know, other than that, we do know that, you know, ServPro was there and worked with us in the beginning. There's nothing to say that, you know, cities, any of you city officials that are listening, something to think about. Are these agencies, just like a regular contractor, licensed within the city? And I'm sure that, you know, when it comes to ServPro of Redondo and Manhattan Beach, you know, they are licensed to operate in the city of Manhattan Beach. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you also want to make sure that any of the contractors that would come upon or contact a victim of a fire or damage or something is also licensed. I think that's the big thing. You want to make sure that they are licensed in the city that you're working, and at least at that point they're reputable. They've sure. at least taken the time to pull a permit.
Can I add something to that, George?
Sure, of course.
Well, so, you know, when you're talking about, see, people who want to maybe put together a list of preferred contractors, like, let's say, you know, for a local cert, that guys that, you know are reputable,
right.
There should be a vetting process. And, you know, right now the criteria for vetting a contractor sort of in a general terms is make sure they're licensed, check with the Better Business Bureau, check local references, you know, these types of things. But I encourage, you know, people to take one step further. Because contractors in general can have a really bad name as far as, you know, they're always exposed to construction defects from, you know, upset, you know, customers for a number of different reasons. So I would tell people, go to the Superior Court's website and type in the name or the company name in their database. And as public records in most areas, the database will pull up if that individual or that company has been involved in any lawsuits, and you can check the lawsuit history that way. So if you're dealing with somebody who all of a sudden is showing up as having, you know, 50 to 100 lawsuits, civil suits, small claims actions, this type of thing, you know you're dealing with somebody who's got, you know, a problematic past, or there might be something wrong there. So that's another tip that people should consider before they sign a, you know, contract for rebuilding. Take a good look at the lawsuit history, or ask an attorney to do a little research. It could be money well spent, you know, for an hour of an attorney's time.
Right. Okay. Wow. This is a huge subject. We're thrilled to have Sean Scott from the Red Guide to Recovery. You can go to the Red Guide to the Red Guide to Recovery.com. The Red Guide to Recovery.com and find out more information. This is the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America. At this time, we'd like to thank a sponsor. What sponsor do we want to thank?
This is the last commercial I'll be doing for this sponsor, because this event happens tomorrow night. Bank of Manhattan presents LA Networking Matters' 4th Annual Networking for a Cause event. Network your heart out. It matters, at the Manhattan Country Club on Wednesday, February 20th. Each year, the Networking Matters Committee selects two local charities that will benefit from the event proceeds. This year's beneficiaries are the Toberman Neighborhood Center and Peninsula Seniors. It's a terrific opportunity to meet, mix, and mingle with like-minded individuals and local business owners. You don't want to miss out on the raffle event either. Corporate sponsors and local businesses provide an array of amazing items for the drawing, including hotel stays, gift certificates for restaurants, shops, and services, and merchandise from local retailers. The doors open at 5:30, and the event runs until 8:30 p.m. Pre-order tickets by Monday, February 18th. That was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can't get your discounted rate anymore. Tickets at the door are $35. Price includes heavy appetizers, pasta bar, one glass of beer or wine, and unlimited networking opportunities. For more information and ticket purchase, visit the website at lanetworkingmatters.com or contact Julianne Whalen at 310-370-0555. South Bay by Jackie is a proud media sponsor of Network Your Heart Out. It matters. So that's tomorrow night, everybody. It's going to be a good time. I'm going.
I'll be there.
Excellent.
You'll be there?
Of course. I have
fabulous.
I have to network.
Okay, there you go. I'll see you there.
There you go.
And I'm glad you said that, so now I don't have to promote it. You know, I was going to talk about it.
You can talk about it, too.
No, you already talked about it. I'm going to talk about what you're going to do.
You can talk about it again. You can talk about it again.
Okay, all right. Let's argue.
What a crack team. We're going to get that event promoted somehow. Yes. So, Sean, we've just scratched the surface, but we've talked about one kind of scenario. What do you have a different scenario that you'd like to tell people about, or?
Well, sure. I'm going to share with you something that comes directly out of my book, because you asked kind of, in simple, layman's terms, what should happen right after, the fire department leaves or the first responders leave. So I'm just going to, share with you a few points. So we talked about contact your insurance company first, and then you want to find out who you're dealing with. So there's a little due diligence involved. Then you need to be careful when you invite strangers into your home. Verify the identity and validity of any company you deal with. Avoid possible price gouging. Don't be fooled by discount offers. Beware of high-pressure sales tactics. Get current local references and insist on a written contract. So those are points that come out of my book in Chapter 14 that George was talking about, that specifically points out some of those first initial steps. In the first page of that chapter, there's a heading that says the five tricks of a con artist. And I think probably in general terms, these five tricks, if you really digest these simple tips, it's going to give you an immense advantage in this arena as far as avoiding a disaster scam. Mm-hmm. And knowing ahead of time going into it is, so scam artists a lot of times are going to give you something for nothing. So we talked about these offers for a free board up or free emergency services. This is that way to get in that instills that feeling of obligation in you. Number two, they make you like them. So remember, these are trained professional salespeople who attend seminars and extensive trainings to become the best they can possibly be at selling you on their services. So they're very sharp. So they're going to be handsome or nice-looking gals or whatever. If you're a Spanish-speaking person, they're going to send out someone who's fluent in Spanish. If you're an older person, they may send out somebody who's older. They're going to try to tailor make the right type of salesperson that's going to fit your profile.
Right.
So, people would never imagine something like this, that it's this in-depth and this, complex, but people need to be aware of this. This is a key issue in recovery and disaster preparedness because this is going to happen at some level. Okay, so number three, they make you think it's now or never.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense of urgency. You need to board it up right now. The city mandates that you protect your property and keep people from entering that house. So there's that pressure like, well, I better act because I don't want to get fined by the city. So there's a kind of a fear and manipulation component in some of the sales pitches.
Mm-hmm.
Then, there's always they say they're going to make you rich. That feeling of like, hey, if you sign up with us, we're going to get you more money from your insurance company because, they're going to lowball you and take advantage of you. So there's, again, that there's a greed factor in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, that they make you believe it worked for others. And I've actually witnessed this situation where, you know, a scammer would go up to a potential client, hand them a cell phone and say, "This is Mrs. Jones. We just did a job for her last week. She'd like to talk to you, you know, about how her experience was with our company." And little does the homeowner realize that the person on the other end of the phone is a family member posing as a disaster survivor who had a good experience. And these are all just simple things that, you know, are very, believe it or not, very common out there, especially after, you know, structure fires. Because there's a lot more structure fires that happen in the United States on a daily basis than there are Hurricane Sandy occurrences.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, that's my initial reaction of fear and dread has kind of morphed into maybe there's a simple solution. Maybe there's an opportunity for people to learn these techniques that you described of what scam artists and other less than honest business people are doing. And then there's an opportunity for someone to go out there and be an ombudsman, a sort of a coach that can go out and actually help victims through these processes. I'm thinking that someone might be interested in doing something like that, actually going out and talking to disaster victims, fire victims, about what to do, what not to do. Not that they have any resources of their own. They're just there to coach the family through the process.
Well, like, for instance, Joe, okay, so what we just talked about, you know, you obviously see there's a value there.
Yeah.
And it's coming straight from my book. So what the concept is now the fire department is getting these books.
Right.
You know, they have them on their trucks.
Right.
And now before they leave the scene of a fire and they have a few minutes to spend with that homeowner, they can hand them this book and say, "Hey, before you make any decisions and sign any contract, take a few minutes. When you go back to your hotel or, you know, when we leave, just read, you know, these couple of pages before you make any decisions, you know, tonight or today." And so now they have the ombudsman. They have that person in print form speaking to them off these pages saying, "Hey, be careful. Here's what to watch out for. Before you sign that, you know, check these, you know, these few items to be sure you're not doing the wrong thing." So that's the concept and the mission of the Red Guide to Recovery, is to put this in the hands of the first responders so that on a national level, the people will have this information at their disposal. Because when do you need this information? You need it right when the fire department is on your doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have the book ahead of time, it's still good. It's going to educate you. It's going to be good for preparedness, preparing for recovery. But when you're really going to digest it and really take it to heart is in those moments and those hours and those days immediately after disaster, when all of a sudden all of this is right in your face.
It's real.
Mm-hmm.
And it's me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's great. I love the idea that more fire departments need to have these books readily available, ready to pass out. I mean, I would imagine that fire departments have realized across the country that they need to pass out something, but maybe they aren't prepared yet. Maybe.
Well, fire departments in large part across the country, many of them are volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have money in their budgets to mm-hmm. purchase books to give away for free. So that's where we're looking for, you know, corporate sponsorships, for state or federal grants, for, you know, government agencies to partner with us to bring the resource to their first responders. So we're getting creative with finding the funding sources and the partners to be able to bring this to the first responders at no cost to them in their budgets, and then being able in turn to provide this resource for free to those who need it most, and that's the families and the individuals who are affected by these disasters.
Right. It's amazing when you say that. It sparked a memory that over 70% of firefighters in the country are volunteer firefighters and not paid firefighters. That's incredible. I guess lots of small towns and other unincorporated areas simply can't afford to maintain a professional fire department. And perhaps there's not even a need, because when the time comes, there are going to be neighbors helping neighbors anyway, right? But a great deal of firefighters in the world, and in certainly in the U.S., are volunteers. It's incredible. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you very much, Sean Scott, from the Red Guide for Recovery.com, for coming again. We really appreciate it, because this is just critical information that people really need to be aware of. Thank you.
Sure. And if you want more tips on the website, under our the tab where it says recovery tools, you'll see a tab about the fourth one down that actually has a list of numerous PDFs and links to videos and different things that are all about the scams. And it's under, again, recovery tools, which is the top on the top toolbar, right. And you'll see a lot of great additional links to resources that will help you through the process.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Red Guide to Recovery.com. Thanks so much, Sean. Hold on a moment. We're going to have some announcements and see what's coming up on the show next week. George, what's coming up?
Thank you. Before next week, though.
Oh.
Tomorrow evening.
Yes.
Our own Jackie, are you still doing this?
I am.
Good. Tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., Fitness Evolution, 200 North Harbor Drive, women's self-defense classes with our own Jackie Balestra. Designed for women by women.
Ollie, I'm not going to be there tomorrow night because I have to go to this Networking Matters event, so my assistant is going to be teaching the class tomorrow night.
Okay.
Okay. All right. That's fine. But, you know, if you've been going and you want some more, how was last week? The numbers improved, did they?
A little lower. Yeah, a little lower last week. But I think this week the numbers are going to go back up.
Okay.
It's so new. It fluctuates a lot. You know, we haven't had a chance to establish anything yet. So it'll happen.
All right. Very good. And then on this coming, all right, let's go tonight. You can go to and learn how to do your self-defense. Tomorrow evening, go network your business and come join Jackie and I and talk about and promote your business, where I'll be promoting CERT and Jackie will be promoting her business. And then on Thursday evening, let's all take a ride over to Gardena, where the Tri-City CERT organization will have their monthly meeting from 7 to 9. It'll be at the Gardena Valley Baptist Church at 1630 West 158th Street between Denker and 158th. One of their new members, Jim Hone, the former Santa Monica Fire Department Chief, who was in charge of the department back in 2003, when an elderly gentleman ran into the farmer's market, injuring 69 and killing 10 people. They're going to discuss mass casualty and triage and head-to-toe assessments. Mm-hmm. Our guest next week is going to be, I just lost him, Jim Blair. Jim Blair is going to discuss hospitals, resources, the problems. He is with the Center for Healthcare Emergency Readiness, and we're going to talk about healthcare and our system today and what needs to be done. That's next week on our show, a week from today. In 2 weeks, on is going to be the 5th. All of a sudden, I lost the bottom of my report. On 3-5, preparing for disaster at the port, David Mallon of the Port of Los Angeles, he's the emergency manager there, and he's going to talk about the Port of L.A. That ought to be an interesting show also. Coming up the end of March, March 30th in the morning, we're going to have CPR AED training. Mm-hmm. On April 27th and June 22nd, we're going to have two classes, an AM class and a PM class. The Manhattan Beach CERT Association will be teaching Red Cross first aid, CPR and AED with a two-year certificate. And for information on that, you can go to our website, mbcerta.org. On the left-hand side, you can sign up for one of those classes, whether it be AM or PM. And then the big one here that I want everybody to know about is our next CERT class, which is half full, March 8, 9, and 10, a Friday evening, a Saturday and Sunday. We will have our first CERT class of the year. Come and learn how to take care of yourself, your immediate family, your neighbors, even help the city after a disaster. And that's what's happening this week on Preparing for Disaster in America.
I got to ask you something, George. David Mallon, how did you find him, or how did he find you?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, only because I'm looking at my Facebook page, and there's a David Mallon that was commenting on something about this whole Measure A thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Small world.
Maybe. There may be more than one.
True. Okay.
Oh, I know, because Saturday night I was at a birthday party, and somebody took a picture of a cake and pinned me. You know, so it looked like I was the picture of the birthday cake or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I got a gazillion emails, and then somebody wanted to be my friend.
Yeah.
Well, they could get it or something or see something else. And she looked up George Butts, and there were about 40 George Buttses. And the only way that was me was by my picture.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just have to ask him when he's on the show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
What a great show it's been, Sean. Sean Scott again from the RedGuideToRecovery.com. So, Sean, let me ask you, just in the few minutes that we have left, what impact has this had on your life? Is this your main business, or what's going on with the Red Guide to Recovery?
Yeah, so it is now, you know, my main, you know, business is to promote and to, you know, get this, you know, resource, you know, into counties and states across the country. Mm-hmm. The inquiries that we're getting, you know, nationally and even internationally now has just been tremendous, because it's something that has been needed, that nobody realized that there was this gap that needed to be filled. And so now with this book available, and it can be customized to any state, any county, any company, any agency, you know, it's, you know, people realize, wow, this would be really great to help make America resilient, make our employees resilient, help CERT teams, you know, for training. Our CERT teams in San Diego County are using it every time they have a class so that they have an idea of what the recovery process involves.
Right. Often when these things come up, where you have a nexus between not a victim, but someone who has had a loss, parties in the middle trying to get access to insurance, and insurance companies, what's often not understood and what's often not highlighted is that insurance companies don't want their monies scammed. They don't want their ultimate recipients of insurance monies to be in a position where the money has been spent or the money has been encumbered by contract to the point where the homeowner is not getting the full value of their insurance contract. So I think you ought to approach insurance companies. I think many insurance companies would be very, very interested in funding and or promoting this so that less and less of their ultimate intended recipients of insurance money would have some of that money stolen or lost due to inappropriate investments. They they want their money well spent when it's when,
sure.
Yeah. So I think insurance companies would be a good target for you to help mitigate, you know, spending their money unwisely.
Well, that would be a definite fit for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you hadn't thought about that yet?
No, of course I have. I've actually talked to it with a couple.
Yeah. And how did they respond?
Well, they you know, the ones I've spoken to have, you know, really loved the idea. Again, it comes down to, you know, I have to express the need, so we have to get letters of support from, you know, say a regional fire agency or a local fire agency that we can show, hey, there's a need and this is how many we need. You know, then it comes down to cost, because even insurance companies, they have limited budgets that are used for marketing materials or advertising campaigns and that kind of thing. So you got to find the right guy at the top of the, you know, of the totem pole to talk to be, you know, who can write a check to actually, you know, do something. So it takes a lot of research to find, you know, the key people. And then again, you know, if you have a fire or flood of your house, you're not going to call the insurance company. You're going to call your agent. So in a lot of cases, this is something that the agents should have. You know, so when their insureds call with a loss, they can, you know, go out to the house and provide them with a copy as well. I mean, that's another another option. Because your idea, Joe, about the ombudsman, really what that is somebody, you know, needs to be there to spend a little time with these people to walk them through the process,
right,
you know, and kind of explain it. So that's a great idea. You know, and how to implement it like that could be, you know, maybe the role of the insurance agent, mm-hmm. since they have a vested interest in the claim process as well.
Right. Absolutely, I agree. I think any insurance agent worth their salt probably would like to be better prepared and have something that they can lead and guide their clients who have experienced a loss. If I were an insurance agent and I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to make my relationship with that client more valuable to them, the Red Guide to Recovery is ideal. Right?
Man, one last thing. I thought, you know, if you're an employer and you have, you know, critical employees who have been infected by a disaster, the faster they return to work, the less business interruption you're going to suffer. Because a lot of businesses that go through a disaster never reopen. And that isn't so much a result of supply chain issues or loss of data and computers. It's because key individuals can't return to work. They're stuck in this quagmire of trying to figure out the recovery process. And so what are you going to do first? Are you going to go back to work and make sure that you retain your job? Or are you going to be looking out for your family? Well, of course you're going to look out for your family. Well, if you can expedite that process and get back to work quicker because you've got this information in your hands, well, that everybody wins. The business wins. You keep your job as well as your family wins. So
true. So very true. Well, George, any last thoughts that you have for Sean?
Well, only that, our first back-to-back, I believe, certainly was a success. I'm glad we were able to continue the conversation, and I hope our listeners were able to just get more out of it and continue all of our educations as to what we need to do in the future and how can we make ourselves and our communities much safer. And then the other thing is, wait a minute, I just thought of something here. Sorry, but tomorrow night, Chevron, let's see, is Caltrans going to, are we going to have a problem with Caltrans tomorrow night, Jackie?
Oh, or are we 10 all o'clock, gonna... 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., the Cokers are going to be going up PCH and Sepulveda. I drove down to Mulby yesterday and took some pictures of them. They're huge.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're only moving one at a time.
Oh, well, there's two come in each week for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, it's and two? Okay.
Yes, two of them. Yeah, they have two of them. And so two of them are going to be going up the street tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, 10 to 5 p.m.
A big event.
10 to 5 a.m.
10 p.m. to 5 a.m., sorry,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to have to go out and check that out. They're huge.
And it's not tonight. It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night. It's going to be late. We're thinking about having a party up in the El Pollo Loco parking lot. Watch them go by.
That's not a bad idea.
That's interesting.
Thank
you so much, Sean. It's been great. We loved having you.
Thanks, you guys. Well, loved being here.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Take care. We will talk.
Okay.
Bye-bye, everybody.